Good afternoon. You're listening to KTOO. I'm Yvonne Crumry. Yesterday was Missing and Murdered Indigenous Peoples Day. It's a day of remembrance, awareness, and calls to action to address the crises of Alaska Native and other Indigenous people facing extreme rates of violence. Family members of missing and murdered people gathered off Egan Drive in downtown Juneau to sing, drum, and get the attention of those driving by. Patricia Graham holds a sign high above her head with a young woman's face on it.
That's my sister Jody. She was born in November 4th, 1966, and was murdered in 1991 when her daughter was 5 years old.
Jody Erickson was 26 years old. Graham says Erickson took care of her siblings when she was growing up, and her death was a loss for everyone in their family.
And it was from a man who said if he couldn't have her, nobody could. And he was a violent man, so she refused him, and he took her life.
Erickson's killer saw jail time. But Graham points to the numbers of people lost just like her sister that are never found, and their cases are never closed. Alaska Native people are murdered at rates far higher than the national average, according to the National Indigenous Women's Resource Center. But experts say the numbers are hard to track because many of these cases are underreported or misclassified. With her drum in hand, Lechuk Jess Kinville leads a group of singers in a song she wrote about missing and murdered Indigenous people.
It's called Stolen Prayers because we are the prayers of our ancestors, and when one of us is taken, it's a stolen prayer.
Kinville wrote the song when she was mourning her own missing relative, her cousin Tracy Day.
I was just kind of dealing with the grief and the sadness of missing her, and I started thinking about all the people that are hurting right now. And I started praying, and I asked Creator, I said, What can we do to help people heal? What do we need? And this song just came to me.
Kinville says it's a prayer that became a song. In Juneau, I'm Yvonne Crumry. And the temporary flood wall along the Mendenhall River just barely protected hundreds of homes from Juneau's largest glacial outburst flood last year. This summer, city and federal contractors planned to build it much higher. But after the project cost ballooned, leaders decided to scale back that plan. KTOO's Alex Solomon reports.
Until Monday, both the Army Corps of Engineers and the City and Borough of Juneau said they were building the Mendenhall River flood wall to withstand a flood nearly double the size of last year, at 90,000 cubic feet per second. But now, they say they'll build the wall to withstand a flood about 30% larger than last year. That's after the Juneau Assembly voted 7-2 to change the plan. City Manager Katie Kester said the wall will be lower because construction is far more expensive than anticipated.
To do the project as we originally envisioned, that the project that I emailed every riverfront property owner and said we were building to 90,000 is just not feasible with available funding.
Building the city's portion of the wall, phase one, to that level is now expected to cost nearly four times the initial estimate. Kester says the city couldn't have known that until crews started working on the HESCO barriers, which are steel cages lined with fabric and filled with sand. This spring, the ground remained frozen for much longer than last year, so work on the barriers was delayed about a month.
As staff got into this project and started really digging, they realized they had to undo large chunks of the HESCO barriers. So instead of just going in and fortifying them or adding a couple barriers, it actually meant rebuilding entire sections of wall. It meant twice as many barriers as in phase one.
Denise Koch is the city's engineering and public works director. At the meeting, she presented new figures. It would cost another $8 million to build it against a flood twice the size of last year versus $3 million to make it withstand a flood 30% bigger.
This is a really, really difficult situation for the community, especially people who live in the inundation area. And we're similar to last year. We're always having to make decisions quickly with incomplete information.
The assembly decided to spend the additional $3 million this year, under the assumption that the flood wall will have to be built higher again next year and that it will be more expensive to do that then. The funding gap comes at a lean time for the city. The assembly has proposed cutting dozens of services and closing facilities after voters passed ballot measures that created a large annual budget hole. The city expects it will need to continue paying for temporary flood protection for another decade or more, while the Army Corps figures out a long-term solution. Suicide Basin is the source of Juneau's annual glacial outburst flood. It's a large lake tucked between Jagged Mountains and the Mendenhall Glacier, which acts as an ice dam. Each summer, when the dam breaks, it unleashes billions of gallons of water beneath the glacier that rushes through the suburban Mendenhall Valley. As the glacier melts due to climate change, the basin grows, and so does the flood, for now. Mike Records is a hydraulic engineer at the Army Corps in Alaska. He estimates the basin will release damaging glacial outburst floods for roughly another 25 years before it stops being a problem. But he says that prediction could change.
As the glacier continues to retreat, there might be a second Mendenhall Lake, which would then cause significant calving and would accelerate the rate of retreat of the Mendenhall Glacier.
Because glaciers retreat faster on water than on land, he says that could dramatically reduce how long the annual flood remains a problem. Scientists are currently working to refine the flood lifespan estimate by measuring the depth of the glacier and how quickly it's thinning and retreating. Records says the Army Corps considers engineering solutions according to the probability that a flood will exceed a given size within a certain number of years. And he says the risk accumulates over time. It's like flipping a coin repeatedly.
You flip a coin, there's a 50% chance of getting heads. But you know if you keep flipping that coin, you will get a tail eventually.
The Army Corps' analysis shows a very low chance of a flood twice the size of last year happening this year. But a flood that large has a 40% chance of hitting the valley at least once in the next 25 years. And HESCO barriers are not made to last that long. John Rajek is the chief of geotechnical and engineering services at the Army Corps in Alaska. He says the agency aims to start on a medium-term solution next year and is weighing a few ideas. The first idea is to simply build the HESCO barriers higher. The second idea is to rework the river channel to move floodwater out of the valley faster.
The third concept that we're looking at is a sheet pile wall system that would basically act as a flood wall.
Sheet pile walls are commonly used to create seawalls. They're thin, lightweight, and driven down into the soil. They'd replace the HESCO barriers. The next flood is expected this summer. It has struck in August the past 3 years. In Juneau, I'm Alex Solomon.
Governor Mike Dunleavy is pressing lawmakers to act quickly on his proposal to cut taxes for the Alaska LNG project. Dunleavy says with liquefied natural gas prices high and supplies uncertain because of the war with Iran, now is the moment for the $46 billion mega project.
There's a lot of movement now in the energy world across the world. Many of our Asian allies and others are looking, where are we going to get energy on a long-term secure basis? Well, Alaska's secure. There's no doubt about it. But Alaska always also costs more.
The governor proposed a 6-cent tax on each unit of gas flowing through the pipeline from the North Slope to South Central Alaska. That cut state revenue by about 90% when compared with the existing property tax. The current drafts of the House and Senate's gas pipeline tax bills have a much higher rate, 20 cents in the House and 55 cents in the Senate, plus additional expenses. Dunleavy says neither one is good enough to coax investors to buy in or lend to a high-cost, risky project. Lawmakers are working with the governor's office and pipeline developer Glenn Farn in refining their version of the bill. The bipartisan Senate Majority Caucus, on the other hand, is taking a more adversarial approach. Senator Kathy Geisel, an Anchorage Republican who chairs the Senate Resources Committee, says lawmakers aren't working with all the information they need, like the full cost of the project.
Really, if they want any kind of tax reduction, they need to help us with this bill, giving us actual numbers.
Geisel says the project could go forward, even if lawmakers do nothing and leave the existing property tax in place. It has all the permits it needs, and an advisor to the governor told Geisel's committee Tuesday morning that a higher tax rate would simply be passed through to consumers. But Glenn Farn's Alaska head, Adam Prestige, says that a high tax rate risks the project not going forward at all. Here he's talking about the Senate's tax rate.
I would describe that as very burdensome for the project and potentially prohibitively so in terms of having a phase one project go forward on any of the timelines that we've discussed.
Prestige says Glenn Farn is open to some concessions not included in the governor's bill. He says the company has agreed to create so-called community impact funds to compensate for the cost of building the pipeline, to include a spur line to Fairbanks, and offer municipalities the opportunity to buy equity into the project. Dunleavy says if lawmakers don't pass something by the end of the session in 2 weeks, he's willing to call a special session to get it done.
Lawmakers in the Alaska House unveiled their first draft of the state's capital budget on Monday. It adds about $100 million in spending to the roughly $250 million capital budget that passed the Senate last month. Most of the added items focus on shoring up schools and university facilities around the state. Representative Calvin Schroggy, an Anchorage Independent who co-chairs the House Finance Committee, says the House's approach to an unexpected influx of war-related oil revenue mirrors the Senate's.
To the extent we have surplus revenues this year, we want to make sure that we're directing those towards really addressing our huge backlog in deferred maintenance across the state.
More than half of the House's additions would go towards K through 12 schools across the state, including two repairs to Mount Edgecombe High School in Sitka and the construction of a new school in the Northwest Arctic community of Deering. The House's capital budget also includes $9 million in funding for 9 renewable energy projects around the state. And it would set aside $15 to $25 million in funding for upgrades to the Port of Alaska and Anchorage, depending on oil prices. The new draft also removes the state's authorization to receive roughly $135 million in federal funding for 2 controversial transportation projects, the Cascade Point Ferry Terminal in Juneau and the West Susitna Access Road in the Matanuska-Susitna Borough. Both projects have been the subject of intense criticism, but removing the West Susitna project from the state's capital budget drew pushback from Republican lawmakers, including Fairbanks Republican Will Stopp.
The West Sioux Access project is one of the few things that we have in Alaska that is going toward positive steps for resource development. We're a resource development state.
The House Finance Committee is scheduled to consider amendments Thursday and Friday. Schroggy says he expects the bill to head to the House floor next week. And as for the weather here in Juneau, it's 50 degrees and overcast this afternoon. Looks like we might see a little bit more rain and weather tonight, but tomorrow is a high of 50 degrees and looks like it will be fairly dry. And it looks like we may have a rainy weekend here in Juneau. This is KTOO.